A young solicitor climbs through the Carpathian Mountains toward a crumbling castle, dismissing local warnings as superstition. An innocent woman sleepwalks to a cemetery bench where something waits in the shadows. A ship crashes into harbor with a dead captain lashed to the wheel and cargo holds filled with nothing but earth. These moments from Bram Stoker's 1897 masterpiece have haunted readers for over a century. Yet the novel's true power lies not in jump scares, but in its exploration of corruption, invasion, and the fragile boundaries between civilization and chaos. What makes Dracula endure isn't the cape-wearing aristocrat of Hollywood fame. Stoker's Count is far more terrifying, a predator who infiltrates Victorian England like a disease, turning its most virtuous citizens into monsters. The novel speaks to primal fears that transcend its era, the stranger who enters uninvited, the infection that spreads through intimacy, the darkness that waits for us to lower our guard. Jonathan Harker's business trip to finalize Count Dracula's property purchase becomes a nightmare. The initially charming Count reveals unsettling traits, appearing only after dark, never eating, casting no reflection. When Harker cuts himself shaving, Dracula lunges for his throat with demonic fury, stopping only at the crucifix's touch. Horror mounts as Harker realizes he's prey, not guest. He witnesses Dracula crawling face down along the castle wall like a lizard. Three vampire women nearly feed on him before Dracula intervenes. "This man belongs to me." Most chilling, discovering the Count in a coffin filled with earth, eyes blazing with hatred. 50 such boxes are bound for England, each a potential lair. Dracula is using Harker to perfect English mannerisms, preparing to blend into London society. The Count isn't merely hunting, he's colonizing, establishing himself in the British Empire's heart. When Harker escapes by scaling the castle walls, his hair has turned white from trauma. While Jonathan fights for survival in Transylvania, life in England appears deceptively normal. Lucy Westenra receives 3 marriage proposals in one day from Dr. Seward, American adventurer Quincy Morris, and nobleman Arthur Holmwood. She accepts Arthur, but remains friends with all three, creating a bond that will prove crucial. Dr. Seward observes his patient Renfield, whose bizarre behavior, catching flies to feed spiders, then feeding spiders to birds, foreshadows Dracula's approach. The vampire arrives during a violent storm, his ship crashing into Whitby Harbor with its crew mysteriously vanished. A large dog leaps from the wreckage, Dracula, already hunting. That night, Lucy begins sleepwalking. Mina finds her on a cemetery bench with a dark figure bending over her, red eyes gleaming. 2 tiny wounds appear on Lucy's throat. She grows increasingly pale as Dracula feeds nightly, slowly draining her life. Dr. Seward summons Professor Abraham Van Helsing from Amsterdam to treat Lucy's mysterious decline. The Dutch doctor recognizes vampire predation but conceals his suspicions, attempting salvation through blood transfusions. Each suitor, Arthur, Seward, Morris, even Van Helsing, gives blood, creating a symbolic marriage between Lucy and her protectors. Yet she continues weakening, drained nightly by evil that mocks their medical interventions. Van Helsing employs garlic flowers and crucifixes as ancient protections, but circumstances conspire. A maid removes the garlic. Lucy's mother tears away the flowers before dying when a wolf crashes through their window. Unprotected, Lucy succumbs, dying with a disturbing, voluptuous smile, the first sign of her transformation. Reports emerge of a bloofer lady luring children from Hampstead Heath, who return with throat wounds. Van Helsing leads Seward to Lucy's tomb, finding it empty one night, occupied the next by Lucy's body, more radiantly beautiful than in life, with blood-red lips and sharpened teeth. Lucy's destruction remains literature's most disturbing moments. Arthur drives a stake through her heart while Van Helsing recites prayers, her body writhing in demonic fury before her expression returns to its former sweetness. Van Helsing completes the ritual, severing her head, filling her mouth with garlic. The men emerge to find nature transformed, air sweet, birds singing, celebrating her freedom from undeath. With Lucy destroyed, the group hunts Dracula. Jonathan's journal reveals he purchased Carfax, an abandoned estate near Dr. Seward's asylum, and distributed 50 earthboxes throughout London as multiple lairs. The investigation exposes Dracula's methodical preparation, studying English customs, purchasing properties across neighborhoods, using his nobleman persona as camouflage. Dracula retaliates by targeting Mina. He forces her to drink his blood, creating a psychic connection while beginning her transformation. The attack is deeply violating. Jonathan lies drugged and helpless while Dracula feeds on Mina, then cuts his chest and forces her mouth to the wound. This connection becomes a double-edged sword. Van Helsing hypnotizes Mina, accessing her link to discover Dracula has fled London by ship, returning to Transylvania with his last earthbox. The hunters split up. Godalming and Harker pursue by steam launch, Morris and Seward on horseback, Van Helsing taking Mina directly to Castle Dracula. Victorian technology aids their pursuit. Telegrams coordinate movements, train schedules determine routes, typewritten documents organize intelligence. They're wielding progress itself against ancient evil. The hunters pursue Dracula through harsh Transylvanian terrain as Scani loyalists transport him toward Castle Dracula. Through swirling snow, they race against sunset. Once he reaches his fortress, his power will become overwhelming. Mina's condition deteriorates. She sleeps during daylight, rejects food, and bears a red scar where Van Helsing placed a communion wafer, marking her spiritual contamination. As the Scanis circle the wagon protectively, Jonathan and Quincy Morris fight through with desperate courage. Time becomes their deadliest enemy as the sun descends. Jonathan's knife severs Dracula's throat, while Morris plunges his blade into the vampire's heart, a coordinated strike leaving no room for recovery. Dracula crumbles to dust, his face showing unexpected peace, suggesting release from centuries of cursed existence. His final expression carries a hint of lost nobility, reminding them he was once a warrior defending his homeland. But victory demands sacrifice. Quincy Morris lies mortally wounded. With his final breath, he points to Mina's forehead, now cleansed of the vampire's mark. Mina's salvation becomes a powerful metaphor for civilization's defense against predatory forces threatening to corrupt it from within. 7 years later, the survivors gather to reflect. Jonathan and Mina have found peace in parenthood. Their son Quincy, named for their fallen friend, born on the anniversary of Morris's sacrifice. The group pilgrimages to Transylvania, finding Castle Dracula still standing. Though they possess no tangible evidence beyond their journals, Van Helsing assures them proof is irrelevant. Their victory manifests in every sunrise, every moment of peace, and most powerfully in young Quincy, who represents both sacrifice and hope. Dracula endures because it explores fears transcending its Victorian origins. The Count's invasion mirrors anxieties about immigration and reverse colonization. His corruption of Lucy, turning innocent maiden into predatory monster, speaks to civilization's fragility. Dracula represents the ultimate invasive species, intelligent, adaptive, parasitic, transforming everything he touches. Yet beneath its gothic horror, the novel affirms human solidarity, ordinary people united by love and purpose, overcoming immortal evil through collaboration. Stand at your threshold tonight and consider what you invite inside. Dracula's true terror isn't his supernatural powers, but his patience, his ability to study us, learn our weaknesses, and strike when we're most vulnerable. In our interconnected world, where threats cross borders in hours, Stoker's warning feels prophetic. The Count is gone, but the darkness he represents, patient, hungry, waiting for invitation, remains eternal. Your vigilance is your crucifix. Your community is your garlic. Your refusal to let evil normalize itself is your stake. Because the dead travel fast, but the living must travel together.